Presented by DogNation.com, this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Here's your host, Brandon Adams.
So I hate on a day that's so exciting, us being back in studio, to start with a little bit of bad news, but there is at least a little bit of bad news to mention here for a moment. Georgia did not get linebacker Barrett Carter yesterday. Carter chose Clemson instead. That's not a surprise. We pretty much all knew that's the direction this was going, and for the most part, Georgia fans have been quietly resigned to the fact that, and I even mentioned this when Connor Riley joined us on the show yesterday, it's actually kind of amazing that Georgia has missed out on some, not just in-state players, but some Metro Atlanta kids over the last couple of years, and essentially shrugged it off and gone out and gotten a national prospect just as good, if not better. Georgia has not skipped a beat in recruiting, even though it's missed out on some of the recruits that it wanted to get. However, I at least want to mention this, that in the absence of Georgia getting Barrett Carter, it really transitions us to an interesting discussion of, well, what is happening for Georgia? And in some respects, it feels like for some UGA fans, they say, well, not enough is happening. You know, we're waiting too long for a commitment, or, you know, you're seeing all the hype for all these other programs. I think it's important to remember, though, even in the absence of big name commitments over the last couple of weeks, Georgia did have a few during the lockdown, but it's been a little bit of a time, you know, a wait on some of that kind of stuff. But in the absence of all of that, there are still some really fun things going on. Let me give you an example of this from social media. Donovan Edwards, the top running back out of Michigan for the class of 2021, elite top-level running back, one of the top three backs in the country, shared this in his Instagram story. This is not an edit he did. This is just an edit that he shared. That was kind of a fun way to kick things off here today. It's him touting, or it's him on the screen being touted as a part of running back U. He also gives a shout out to a Lavoisier Carroll there, who is also already in the fold for Georgia for its 2021. One of those nice edits that a Georgia fan shared with him. He shared that on his Instagram story. It's good work all the way around. And admittedly, and by the way, in the background you see, you know, all the great backs. You see obviously Herschel Walker. You see Keith Marshall showing up there. You see Sony Michel, Nick Chubb there, Todd Gurley shows up. It's just a really well done edit that took some time, that took some talent, and obviously touting Edwards as the next in a generation of the RBU running back university. That's just kind of fun all the way around, and an example of what we do see right now. We do see an example of, if elite recruits aren't pledging to Georgia at the moment, elite recruits are still talking about Georgia, shouting out RBU or whatever else. And admittedly, before, I've said on the show that I don't necessarily think the whole, hey, who is defensive back university, or who is linebacker university, or who is sometimes running back university? I've said before that I don't know that stuff actually wins with recruits as much as you might think, the same way that you may occasionally tune out a commercial if you're watching TV or if you're listening to the radio or something like that. I think sometimes the, hey, we're running back university, look how much money our, you know, players are making in the NFL. I think sometimes the average recruit has a tendency to tune out that message as well. Ultimately, it's the relationships that you develop with the other players on campus, the coaches who are going to coach you. Those are ultimately the things that probably matter more than anything else. However, when I saw Donovan Edwards sharing the edit made by a fan on his Instagram story, it did remind me of something that recent Georgia running back signing Kendall Milton said last year about one of the reasons why he was very interested in choosing Georgia. And one of the things that Milton said, and you keep this in mind as you see Donovan Edwards talking about RBU here for UGA there as well, and mentioning Lavoisier Carroll in that same breath, Milton said, hey, all those faces of all those Georgia running backs that you see in the background of that social media edit, a lot of that was crucial for me because of, you know, in my decision to choose Georgia, because the fact that these aren't ancient names that played here 200 years ago. No, these were guys that were part of this program in recent history. And for Milton, he said that mattered. Let me let you hear Kendall Milton on that same topic.
It's huge to me, you know, especially Coach McGee, you know, coaching a majority of those backs. So it just shows that he knows what he's doing. He knows how to get people to the league. And that's my end goal that I want. So, you know, that attracts me.
When I hear Kendall Milton say that, and when I see Donovan Edwards, who obviously I hope chooses Georgia, it remains to be seen what he's going to do. But when I hear them say that, it brings to mind something that at first blush may seem a little weird. You know, for people of my age, I'm 43 years old now. When I think about the Georgia running back position, I think about Herschel Walker more so than anything else. I had a chance to interview Herschel last summer. It was a great thrill for me. Herschel's obviously still in great shape. When you look at him, you see the same guy that was once plowing over defenses in the SEC. But I'm not quite so sure that Herschel Walker wins with recruits as much anymore as a Todd Gurley does, or a Nick Chubb does, or a Sony Michel does. In the case of Kendall Milton, it's Michel and Chubb in particular that might matter here because, as he said, those were guys that were coached by Dale McGee. And I think now you'll add DeAndre Swift into that list there as well. That for Georgia, RBU, running back university, is not something that exists in ancient history. It's not the kind of thing you have to dust off the history books to learn about. No, the guy that will coach you if you come to Georgia, Milton here for 2020, potentially maybe a Donovan Edwards or a Lavoisier Carroll in 2021, you'll be coached by the guy that got DeAndre Swift to the NFL. That's Dale McGee. The guy that got Nick Chubb to the NFL. The guy that got Sony Michel to the NFL. And by the way, Michelle's got a Super Bowl ring. Nick Chubb's one of the highest drafted fantasy running backs for the upcoming season. DeAndre Swift is going to be pegged for stardom there in Detroit. It's easy to imagine following those footsteps if you are Milton, who's on the roster now, potentially Donovan Edwards there in the future. So it's a fun thing to think about. You know, as I said before, there is a new definition of what strength really is when it comes to recruiting. It used to be, oh, man, look at all the commits you're getting. That proves how strong you are. Obviously, Tennessee's trying to hype itself that way here this year. However, I think there's a different kind of definition in place for a school like Georgia. This is not just a homer take because you can say the same thing for Alabama right now as well. That for the programs that are truly confident what they bring to the table in recruiting, they're fine with waiting. They're fine with having a smaller number of commits. What does Georgia have, 7 right now? They're fine with having just a little bit less because eventually they know all those slots are going to be filled, and they're all going to be filled by elite players, whether it's Donovan Edwards or a guy like Smile Mondon as a linebacker response, not getting Barrett Carter or whoever else. Georgia fans have been around the block with Kirby Smart enough now to know that when these commits start to make their pledge, when these spots start getting filled up in the 2021 class, before it's all said and done, Georgia's heading for another elite class again this season as well. My name is Brandon Adams, and this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. It's good to have you with us no matter how you get to us today. And by the way, I can truly say that again. Video, Facebook, YouTube, Twitter. It's kind of funny. Coming back in the studio today is a little bit like when you go into your attic to start looking for your Christmas decorations. Now, we did come back here on Friday a little bit, but it's a thing of you haven't been in this room in months. You look around to see, is everything the way we left it? Are all the computers still working the way they were once working before? Is everything the way that it's supposed to be? So there was a little bit of trepidation on my part, but it looks like so far all systems are go, and we're really glad to do that. By the way, for our radio audience at Athens Sports Radio 960 The Ref, they've been so good to give us a home throughout this entire process as we've been kind of broadcasting from home and doing that thing. So huge shout out to our friends there in the Classic City, and of course podcast form, a lot of different ways to access this show and the podcast audience throughout the time of, you know, it's so much nicer to be here with the lights on and the studio stuff after having been in a very tiny cramped closet down in a very Spartan accommodations of my basement. So it's nice to be here with all of you today. And if those of you check us out on Apple, the Google Player, Spotify, I'm not getting Joe Rogan money for being on Spotify, but I do enjoy being on Spotify each and every day, SoundCloud, everything else. Just glad to have you with us here on Dog Nation Daily here today. And by the way, let me give a shout out to another broadcast going on here today as well. Don't forget this afternoon, or this evening, I should say, 6 p.m. It's Before the Hedges, presented by Kroger. That is back tonight. Really good recruiting talk for Jeff Sintel. Where does Georgia go for linebacker help after Barrett Carter did, as expected, choose Clemson yesterday? We will get a lot of that from Jeff Sintel here tonight. Before the Hedges, presented by Kroger at 6 p.m. He's also had an incredible lineup of guests. That's really been fun to watch play. So good stuff there. And our friends at Kroger got some good news for you there as well, because when you're ready to refuel, Kroger's got you covered on that. They're combining March fuel points with April fuel points so they don't expire until May 31st. So a great opportunity to obviously get the groceries and the household items you need at Kroger, and also get some big-time fuel point stuff as well. Not going to expire until May 31st, so you can focus on what really matters for right now. So your fuel points will be ready for you when you're ready to use them. Really cool stuff from our friends at Kroger. We really appreciate them doing that. It's Mike Griffith coming up here in just a couple of minutes. We'll get ready to talk to him here today. Before that, I want to talk about the Georgia defense again for a moment. And we did a decent amount on this earlier in the week. I wanted to follow up on that because Pro Football Focus, who I think I cited the other day on something related to Georgia, also gave another stat this week that I thought was pretty interesting. Now, when it comes to this stuff, I never know how PFF gets this. They're not exactly showing their work sometimes the way that your high school algebra teacher wanted you to, but we'll take their word on this. This is kind of a cool stat. It says Georgia surrendered just basically 0.7 yards to opposing rushers before contact per attempt last season. That's the lowest rate in the nation. So basically, the average running back is only getting 0.7 of a yard before Georgia's putting a hat on him last season. Nobody was better in that regard, according to Pro Football Focus. And we saw this with our own eyes. Georgia was not yielding rushing yards at all. The whole thing about not giving up a touchdown to a running back or only giving up, I think, what, 2 rushing touchdowns all year long, sometimes that kind of thing can be a statistical anomaly. I don't think that Smart particularly enjoyed knowing everybody in America was talking about that last year. I think he thought that was extra motivation for the teams that were playing Georgia times, because Kirby himself tried to downplay that from time to time. But it was, though, I think, an embodiment of just how physical Georgia was last season, the point of attack when it came to rushing defense. I've said before, I want to see this team sack quarterbacks more. I want to see this team be more impactful behind the line of scrimmage. But there is something to be said for being dominant and effective at the line of scrimmage, and pretty clearly Georgia was a year ago. I think it's a really good brand for this team. Because let's face it, if you look right now at all the teams trying to have America's best offense, the list of teams trying to do that's actually pretty long. I mean, just given the competition to be the best offense in America, the chances of actually succeeding in that regard and being that best offense, man, that's tough to do. However, how many teams at the very top level, not the trying to go 6-6 and make the blah, blah, blah bowl, but teams at the very top level, how many of those teams right now are even trying to have an elite defense? Is Oklahoma trying to have an elite defense? You know, think about some examples of some teams that are seemingly a lot more content being offensive-oriented than defensive-oriented. Clemson's pretty clearly trying to have a great defense. Obviously, Ohio State's trying to be great on both sides of the ball, but there are a lot of teams very comfortable being thought of in kind of a finesse sense. More offensive than defensive. Georgia has a little bit of a clear path towards being America's best defense, and the physicality that's a part of the Georgia brand helps there in that regard. I'm a big believer that Georgia's not going to win a national championship unless it improves offensively, but when you are as good defensively as Georgia has a chance to be, I won't say they're there yet, they have a chance to be. When you're as good as they have a chance to be, you don't have to be the best offense. You just have to be better than you were a year ago, and I think that's kind of a nice thought to keep in mind there. And by the way, when it comes to how Georgia achieved that physicality the Pro Football Focus touted them for, when it comes to how they got that done, Kirby Smart explained, listen, it's not as simple as just going out there and playing sort of the man ball version of defense. Offenses are getting more and more complicated. You got to have everybody firing together as one unit if you want to get this done. In fact, here is what he said about his rush defense during the season a year ago.
It's everybody. In today's world, every play has 3 plays. So they can throw it to him, they can toss it to him, or he can keep it. You're at the point of attack at all 11 positions. So if you play good run defense, it's not that guy or that guy. I mean, it's every guy, because football has just evolved to the point where that guy's cracking that guy, so the guy over there has got to go make the play. You're all tied into a string.
I think that's a really interesting point, and it's one of those things where, you know, even though I probably wouldn't understand all the various facets of this because I'm not an X's and O's expert the way that Kirby Smart is, it's the kind of subject I could sit there and listen to him talk more about, because I think that you see an example of this when you watch the modern game, not just Georgia, but teams that play at the highest level like Georgia does, that you can't just be a good rush defense by being bigger than your opponent, because in the SEC, more often than not, you're playing with a nickel back on the field. Your base defense now is essentially a 5 defensive back look, and when Georgia faced LSU in the SEC championship game, at times they had 7 defensive backs in the field. I hope we don't see that alignment much more from Georgia in the future, but it is an example of you can't just be bigger than your opponent when it comes to stopping the run. You've also got to be physical at times with limited physical personnel in the field, limited number of linebackers, you know, limited number of beefy guys. You got to find a way to not just overwhelm your opponent with physicality, but be physical when you have a personnel grouping on the field that's not necessarily conducive to that. So Georgia obviously figured out a great way to do that a season ago. Nice to see Pro Football Focus give them a shout-out, and fun to think about how that physicality of the rush defense, the brand that Georgia established for itself and has been working to establish under Kirby Smart, how that might also come into play for this defense this year as it tries to take the next step and lead this team towards what could be a championship. So, well, fun conversation all the way around there. It's great to have you with us here on Dog Nation Daily. Later on the show today, this is not particularly important, but I do think it's kind of interesting. I feel like there was a national website that has snubbed Kirby Smart. I'm curious if you'll agree with me when I lay out the facts for you a little bit later on. We will do that then. For now, let's get ready to say hello to Mike Griffith.
From Athens and across the SEC or wherever the recruiting trail may lead, here's a DogNation.com insider.
Boy, it's great to have Mike Griffith here on Dog Nation Daily, and great to be back in the studio to do that with him again. Mike, good enough to join us on video a lot over the course of our lockdown, but it's fun to kind of get this thing back to normal here today. Mike, we really appreciate you. Thanks for being here. Hope you are doing well on this Wednesday. Good to be able to talk to you.
Yeah, good to see you back in the saddle, B.A.
Yeah, no doubt about that. Mike, I want to start with something that you wrote about at DogNation.com, and I kind of joked about this on my video yesterday that if you want to break the internet, the idea of Justin Fields and Jamie Newman working out together with Quincy Avery, the famous quarterbacks coach, and then they weren't the only guys that are a part of this, but for the Georgia fan, both those names get a ton of attention. Newman, the guy that's going to be pegged as the likely starter here in 2020. Obviously, we know the backstory with Justin Fields. If you're looking for all the search engine optimization you can get, just put those two guys in the same story, put those two guys in the same video. That did kind of jump out at me as pretty interesting.
Yeah, and I think it's good for both quarterbacks and good for both programs. I mean, you know, these guys are friendly with one another. They're comparable. Quincy Avery talked about how they're both quick. Obviously, they both have very strong arms. They're both big. I mean, they're both NFL prototypes. They're both first-round projections. And, you know, they're friendly with each other, but you've got to know that Justin Fields looks at Jamie Newman as taking over a program that he once coveted, and Jamie looks at Justin as a guy that he knows he's going to be compared to this year statistically. Interestingly enough, last year, Jamie actually averaged more total yards per game than Justin Fields playing at Wake Forest. That's a stat that kind of surprised me when I dug into those numbers, B.A. But I think it's healthy. I think it's good. Talking to Quincy, he feels good about both of those quarterbacks and feels good about the way Justin's going to fit into the Georgia offense.
Well, I will say that
Jamie's going to fit into the Georgia offense.
Sure. I will say this, that one of the things that Quincy also brought up in the story that you wrote was, and I thought this was really interesting, that we are all aware of what quarterbacks are not doing right now. They're not meeting face-to-face with the coaches. A lot of that would be restricted at this point in time anyway, but they're not, you know, getting a chance to be with their their teammates, doing some of the voluntary 7-on-7 stuff they might otherwise be doing. But if I read Quincy Avery correctly in your story, he brought up what I thought was a pretty interesting point, that they are working more fundamentally than they otherwise might be. They're not doing this, therefore they have more time to do that, and that for them is the kind of fundamental work that a guy like Avery is probably well-equipped to provide more of. And I got to tell you, Mike, there's an aspect of that for me that's pretty interesting. I've told you before that I want to see a simplified Georgia offense this season because of the absence of spring practice. I think that's what a smart coach ought to be good at. Todd Monken streamlining the process to what are the basic essentials you have to know to go out there and be successful. If you're coupling that with someone like Newman, who is a sharp guy, he's a college graduate already from a fancy pants private school like Wake Forest. If a guy like that has been spending his entire coronavirus lockdown sharpening the saw in terms of the fundamentals and everything else like that, I got to tell you, Mike, as a fan who wants the best for Newman, that doesn't seem like such a bad deal for me.
Yeah, no, I think it's good, you know, working on the technical aspects of the game. You know, Jamie came to Georgia to run a little bit more of a pro-style offense than he had at Wake, and, of course, Georgia got Jamie to run some more RPOs, so the two are going to meet in the middle, and, you know, I think Munkin's going to produce an NFL quarterback here. You know, the real key is, here we go again, B.A., I hate to go here, but these receivers, let's hope these receivers are learning their hand signals. Let's hope these receivers are learning their route trees. You've got to be counting on those receivers to be taking care of their business. I mean, we've seen it time and time again. A quarterback is only as good as his receivers, and they've got to get open. They've got to run the right routes. They've got to catch the football.
I want to talk to you about something else that you've written at DogNation.com recently looking at, and there's a lot of these look-ahead lines this time of year. BetMGM out of Las Vegas is the most recent to share theirs. Some of these numbers are a little different than what we've seen when some previous iterations of this have come out from different sports books. Let me start with Georgia-Alabama for a moment. We see Bama as a 7.5-point favorite over Georgia. We'll give the Tide 3 points for being at home, and even with the uncertainty of how many fans there will be in the stadium, I think for now you got to operate on the assumption it's still kind of a classic 3-point value for being at home, which means that Vegas still sees a gap between Georgia and Alabama, even when you account for the home field advantage there. I guess I kind of understand where that's where they're coming from on that, but it's interesting to note that even when, you know, accounting for, you know, the value you get for playing at home, Vegas still not quite so sure Georgia's ready to win this game.
Well, at least they're accounting for a gap in the perception of Alabama, Georgia. And if you look at the last couple of games, everybody just say, well, look at this, Kirby Smart can't beat Nick Saban. You know, Nick's 19-0 against former assistants. I feel like good defenses don't get accounted for. And maybe last year, the way LSU kind of, you know, shattered everybody, the way Clemson has kind of run roughshod over the ACC, we're starting to see more points scored. There's been more beauty contests now that you have this college football playoff committee that apparently is easily swayed by Oklahoma's offense and forgets all about the fact that Oklahoma's defense is absolutely horrible and they didn't belong in the playoff in 2018. But this year with the COVID-19 BA, I really do believe that the defenses are going to be key this year. Because to your point you made a little bit earlier about the need for offenses to simplify, I also think it's going to be harder for them to have the same choreography. So I only read into that Vegas is counting on public perception. And, you know, if we look at Georgia's past few years when they've had an opportunity to really put the hammer down on teams in opening games, they don't do that. Kirby runs the ball or he brings in another quarterback and has him hand off in the fourth quarter. And that's kind of what I see happening here before the Alabama game. I don't think they're going to trot out all their offense against Virginia or ETSU. And I think you'll see Dwan Mathis, and provided he's cleared, and Carson Beck, I think you'll see both of those guys come in and take handoffs and snaps. So maybe Georgia's opening scores won't be as impressive, but I expect Georgia to beat Alabama this year.
So the one thing that there's plenty we don't agree on, the one thing that we do agree on, I think, based on what you said in the past, is I do see this Georgia-Alabama game being more about defense than some games will be by the end of the season. Alabama's in the midst of a quarterback competition. I think that's still ongoing in that game in September between Mac Jones and Bryce Young. Georgia's still trying to figure out what it has with Jamie Newman, the quarterback spot. Georgia's a good defensive team anyway. I see defense being a bigger factor in the game in September. I presume that both these teams will play again in December. By that point in time, I believe I see a little bit more offensive firepower on display, probably from both teams. But I believe the game in September is largely going to be about defense for the reasons that I mentioned.
I kind of like Auburn a little bit, B.A., not going to lie to you, but early on, I would agree. You know, Alabama has the best offensive line coming back in the SEC, and I don't doubt their offense. We know they've got fantastic receivers, but we've seen Kirby scheme them up. And it's taken the backup quarterback to beat them. It's taken Plan B. And I don't know who Plan B is for Alabama, but I know Tua's gone, and I know Jalen Hurts is gone, and I don't think either one of these guys had proven to me that they're of that caliber. In fact, you know, what has Alabama lost to Auburn 2 out of the last 3 years, and somehow Georgia's beaten Auburn 3 straight games since that loss in 2017. So, to me, I don't think there's any separation between Alabama and Georgia with talent anymore. I think the classes that Kirby's recruited, the fact that Richard LeCount came back, the fact that Monty came back, Malik Herring came back, you know, those were some key guys that could have gone pro, Eric Stokes, and didn't. The fact that you got a grad transfer like Jamie Newman, a first-round NFL projection, I mean, it remains to be seen how he does in this offense, but like the Todd Monken hire, it looks like Kirby's stepping outside his comfort zone a little bit in terms of pro style. I still think you're going to see a dominant run game, or a powerful run game, I should say, but I don't think you're going to see him lean on it quite as much. I think they're going to spread it out, so I'm very optimistic about this season. I guess you can tell I feel good about where George is at right now, even with the pandemic. You know, I've seen a lot of these guys posting workout videos, and Jamari Sellier looks good. And, you know, Justin Schaefer saw one with him and George Pickens running the other day. I mean, these Georgia players look like they're taking care of business. And, you know, the people that say there's going to be an asterisk next to this season, you know what? There should be. And it should mean more, because it shows that these players are working out on their own, that they're a player-led team, and I think there should be more value to the team that wins the championship, because these kids are having to go through a whole heck of a lot more this offseason.
Well, since you bring it up, I'll mention it. The idea that there's an asterisk on the season. I'm a big Braves fan, Mike. The Braves won a World Series in 1995 in what was also a shortened year, shortened for a different reason, coming off the strike from 1994. But when people revisit the Braves' 1995 World Series, no one brings up the fact that it wasn't played as part of a 162-game regular season. So 20 years from now, no one will remember, or at least in terms of the way it's commonly talked about, no one will treat 2020 as a one-off year because of the coronavirus. They're just not going to do that. So I don't care who wins the national championship this year, be it Georgia or somebody else. Let me just say, emphatically, the season counts. The results of what take place once games kick off this fall, they do count whether Georgia wins it all or not, because, history kind of proves that, decades from now, we're not going to remember just how weird the offseason was.
That's a great point. People forget Alabama didn't even win the SEC for two of their national championships. Once they were gifted a playoff spot based on the projection of how good they should be, and the other time they got a rematch with LSU that they probably didn't deserve. So you're right. People forget that Alabama didn't win the SEC in two of their national. And nobody puts an asterisk next to that. So to your point, you're right. Down the road, they're going to look. I don't think it cheapens it any, is my point. I've heard some Georgia fans express some concerns that, geez, if they win it all, are people going to try? And, of course, other fan bases, and if you go to Twitter, you're just asking for it. You saw that yesterday. Some birthday for me, I get torpedoed on Twitter. It's amazing how that Twitter is just the most toxic environment on social media, no doubt. That's always going to be there. People are always going to they're always going to throw 1980. But I'll tell you what, there's a lot of programs at BA that would want to trade places with Georgia right now. In fact, I'll bet you all but about two or three.
So the only thing I'll say about Georgia's national championship, I don't think it's going to happen. I don't think we're going to have empty stadiums one way or another. I don't quite know how full they'll be, but I don't believe they'll be empty. I will admit, as a fan for a moment, it would probably take some of the national championship enjoyment away from me if it was won in an empty stadium. It's not less legitimate. It's still hard to win, even if there's no fans in the stands. But in terms of how much I enjoy it, when I picture it happening, I picture confetti coming down from the sky. And we're getting way off the original topic here, but since you bring it up, when I picture it happening, I picture all the cheers. I picture all that going down. I mean, I watched a lot of sports this weekend. It was a little weird when, Kevin Harvick's going to Victory Lane, just kind of walking by himself on a totally silent track on Sunday. I mean, I will admit, as a fan, I will be a little bit disappointed if Georgia's hoisting a national championship trophy and there's no one there to cheer it, or more specifically, if I'm not there to see it. I'll be a little more disappointed about that, but ultimately it'll still count, I guess.
You need to have the marching band there, need to have the donors, need to have the students, and need to have some fans in the stands. I'm with you. Even if it's a half full or a quarter full, I guess it would be a quarter full, 6 foot distancing. I hope that that's the case by January, BA, or December. I know that when Kirby first talked about it, he kind of conceded that at the start of the year there could be empty stadiums, but that, we hoped as things progress. I mean, you think about where we're at right now. 2 months ago, all this stuff kind of hit, right? And in another 2 months, think about how much we've learned in 2 months and how much more we're going to know, by the middle of July. And then you've got another month till the season. So it's a long way off, but to your point, I agree. I like the full stadium. I like the crowd factor. To me, that's part of what makes college football so engaging and so rich. I'm just glad we got sports back, but I'm kind of with you. I'm kind of hoping that all that comes to fruition.
All right, let me do a couple things quickly before we let you go. On the subject of the MGM odds, you also mentioned the Georgia-Florida game. Georgia, 3.5-point favorite right now. Honestly, Mike, that's almost exactly where that number was around this time a year ago on the basis of some of these early look-ahead lines. I find this to be kind of fascinating. You mentioned the notion of perception a moment ago. I think the perception in this case is pretty interesting because Vegas, for a couple of years now in the preseason, has seen this game as relatively close. 3.5-point number, that half point does a lot of work for you, but that's still a relatively close spread all the way around. Yet there's a little bit more of a gap in terms of the perception of these two teams when it comes to SEC championship odds. Georgia has better odds to win the conference. Over-under number, Georgia has a better projected season win total. It's almost like Florida gets more respect for some of its individual game-by-game stuff, including this game game against Georgia than it does in its overall odds to win the SEC, to win more games than Georgia. I find that to be a little bit interesting.
Well, I think the Florida fans are bought into Dan Mullen. You know, at the end of the day, they say, look at this, you know, back-to-back New Year's six wins, and Dan Mullen's still early in his career. They believe they found the answer in Kyle Trask. I think they're about to find some offensive linemen and a running back. And they might want to remember that they lost some offense against a defense that brings back basically everybody, and they had negative rushing yards through three quarters and didn't get in the end zone until the fourth quarter. So I don't know what's going to be drawn up. It'll be that much grander than last year's scheme. But again, to me, it's a perception grab. I think, you know, I don't want to call it Georgia fatigue, but let's face it, Georgia's won East 3 years in a row. I don't know that, I don't think anybody's ever won it 4 years in a row, right? So I think maybe there's a perception that, you know, hey, it's about time somebody else wins the East, right? Sooner or later, you know, Florida's got to be back.
As much as it pains me to admit back. This, I do believe Florida won the East 4 years in a row in the 90s. That's what Georgia's
did. They win it? I knew Spurrier did it 3 years in a row. I'll have to research. Maybe you're right, BA, but it's been a while if that's the case. I'll have to check that out. But
Connor says they won it 5 years in a row, which makes me want to throw up in my mouth.
Oh, my gosh. Connor.
I knew they at least won it 4 years in a row. So Georgia's got some work to do here, Mike, still on that front.
Yeah, still, it's been a long time. You know, only one other program's done it, and you're talking about, what, 93, 94, 95, 96, I guess? So those 4 years, because 97, Tennessee won it, so
that's
sounds right.
Yeah.
Maybe 92,
yeah.
The first year. Okay, they won it the first five.
Yeah.
You know, that's we're talking about, what, how many years? 23 years ago? So it hadn't been done in a while. That may be something that they're taking into consideration, but I think more than anything, it's a lot of the Florida media. There's a lot of major cities there with a lot of major media members. And there's a lot of talk. I think perception is really what we're dealing with here.
One more point spread I wanted to mention. We can make this quick. When the Georgia-Auburn number first came out, playing in Athens in October for the first time in that rivalry's history, Georgia was only about a 3.5, 4.5-point favorite with some of the sports books. The MGM number that you posted at DogNation.com now shows Georgia as about a 7.5-point favorite over Auburn. I don't like Auburn to win the West. You kind of made a case for them there in that regard. But as a sneaky, tough individual game for Georgia, I do think the game is sneaky tough for Georgia, even though Georgia's history against Auburn last few years, even predating Kirby Smart's, been pretty good. The fact that MGM is showing a lot of love for Georgia here, I also find that to be a little intriguing.
Yeah, I think it's an interesting game. Obviously, Auburn's got Georgia kids on their roster, and it's a rivalry game. It is a rivalry game. I remember talking to the Auburn players about it. You know, it's not Alabama for them, but it's Georgia. It's their second biggest rival. And, you know, Georgia's going to have a lot at stake. You know, you got to win that game to maintain your momentum. I think they'll be coming off a win against Alabama. You know, the last time they had that number one spot, I don't know that they handled it as well as people would have liked. So I'm not saying there's going to be a repeat of Auburn knocking them out at number one, but, you know, it's an October 10th game, and I think Georgia will be undefeated when they come home to play the Tigers. And I think a lot of Bo Nix. You know, I'm on the record with saying I'm buying on that kid. I know his numbers weren't great, but he's a legacy player. He beat Oregon. And I thought he showed well against Georgia in the fourth quarter. I mean, they were driving there. It took a big play by Trevon Walker to deny the Tigers. So I do expect that to be a tussle. That 7.5 scares me a little bit, B.A. I'd feel a lot better about giving Florida 3.5 than giving Auburn 7.5.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think Auburn's a tougher overall game for Georgia, probably. I said that last year. I'm not going to change my mind on that this year. I think it's weird that Auburn gets as little attention as they do when I still feel like it's a fairly dangerous opponent. Let me just squeeze this in before we let you go, Mike. Obviously, around here, we were shocked, saddened by the accusations, the charges against DeAndre Baker. We will readily admit, we hope they're not true. I'm speaking for me on this show on that. There's been a lot of talk recently, a lot of forceful talk from some legal representatives in connection to Baker. For those people who maybe heard the accusations but haven't followed the story as of late, what's the latest on what's going on with DeAndre Baker?
Yeah, DeAndre, you know, he posted a $200,000 bond. He was charged on 8 different counts, armed robbery and robbery. And, you know, the armed robbery is a pretty serious thing. If he's found to have pulled a gun on somebody, that's jail time and a felony, probably out of the league. You know, it's a very serious charge that Commissioner Goodell could be involved in. Now, it hasn't happened yet. The Giants have said distance. He's got an attorney that proclaims he's completely innocent of these charges. There's now supposedly evidence that he was playing a video game, or somebody was at least logged on as him playing a video game when this crime allegedly occurred. I guess it would have been a week ago last Wednesday night, BA. I'm not sure what you and Connor were doing, but you probably weren't at the party DeAndre was, allegedly. So it'll be interesting to see what happens with all this. At the very least, the takeaway from this for DeAndre, though, is at the very least he was associating with the wrong people. He would be guilty of bad judgment in that area. But that doesn't mean he committed a crime. So there is a legal system to be played out. He will have his day in court. He's back to work. His lawyer says he's a changed man. They recognize that DeAndre had some struggles as a rookie, falling asleep in meetings, upsetting teammates, didn't seem as focused. You know, hey, you get handed a $15 or $10 million, I guess it's a $10 million contract and $9 million guarantees, that can change a guy. And so certainly this has been an ordeal for DeAndre, and I know the Georgia fans are hoping that he's found innocent and that the Giants stick with him, but I think there's a lot left to play out.
Well, Mike, great to talk to you. Appreciate you being here on Dog Nation Daily today. We'll look forward to speaking to you soon.
Appreciate it, BA. Have a good one.
Let's take a look around the rest of the league. This is SEC Through.
So a quick story here for a moment. Yesterday happened my daughter's birthday. Mike Griffith also celebrated birthday yesterday, too, but it was my daughter's birthday. So I'm going to pick up a birthday cake at a local shopping center near my home, and happens to be the same shopping center where my local Marlowe's Tavern, my neighborhood tavern right here. So as I'm driving by Marlowe's to go pick up the birthday cake, I look over to the left. Let me tell you what I saw. There were people sitting on the tables in the patios, in the patio area. The Marlowe's Tavern in my neighborhood is now back open. Now, Marlowe's has been doing to-go orders and been knocking out of the park. They got a huge to-go thing getting ready for this upcoming Memorial Day weekend we've been telling you about. You've got between tomorrow at 5 now and tomorrow at 5 p.m. to get your order in on that, marlowestavern.com for more details. But apparently, based on my eyewitness account from yesterday, the patio is open at my neighborhood tavern. Yours may be as well. Do this. Go to marlowestavern.com and find out. You know, different, obviously, you know, locations have different, you know, situations that they're dealing with, and everybody being totally respectful of the situation here. But it was so great to see people enjoying a beverage, enjoying some chef-inspired food on a patio at Marlowe's Tavern. You want to talk about another one of those signifiers that we're working on getting life back to normal? Our friends at Marlowe's Tavern provide that. So check out marlowestavern.com to find out if your tavern in your neighborhood is back open for a dine-in service and, of course, for to-go food, which continues to be a great way to enjoy that great Marlowe's experience. You can find out more about that at marlowestavern.com there as well, and get your order in for Memorial Day weekend, too. They're doing some really fun stuff with that. So I told you the other day that Nick Saban trying to pretend to be Michael Jordan was going to be a problem, that the whole Jordan thing worked great for the NBA in the 90s. I don't know that it works for college football in 2020 because there's freedom of movement now. Honestly, if someone's getting in your face and kind of, you know, doing the Jordan-style leadership, not everybody wants to be around that anymore. I know that I'm right about this because of the response that Alabama has now had, not to me necessarily, but Charles Huff, the running backs coach, put out this video of, hey, man, everybody says we don't have fun around here. And there's this video of, like, Nick Saban having, I'm going to use air quotes around this word, fun. He's driving a boat. For those of you listening to radio podcasts, I'll describe this. He's driving a boat. He's at one point in time driving some like bumper car type stuff. You know, a lot of his ESPN stuff shows up on here. And I guess, you know how like social media is not really the real representation of your life? You know, like everybody tries to put like the best version of themselves on Instagram. Like this is exactly the Nick Saban doing this. If you're watching a video, you see this. It's like Saban's playing basketball with Maria Taylor wearing like a sweater, and he's got his arms folded in front of him like he's in an Olin Mills getting ready for a portrait of some kind. But this is, you know, Charles Huff says, hey man, this is what we do. We have fun around here. We're lighthearted. If you're Nick Saban, you can't have it both ways. You can't say I love Michael Jordan's leadership style, because a lot of the people who play with Jordan and the Bulls did not have very much fun playing with MJ. They won but didn't have very much fun. So Nick Saban's like, hey, I'm Michael Jordan and I'm Mr. Fun. I'm not quite so sure you can have it both ways on that. But speaking of fun, let me show you this video as well for those of you watching on video. So apparently Saban is on a yacht. Now, I've watched this video a few times. I'm not sure I can tell that this is Nick Saban, but no one seems to be disputing that it is Saban. We're not playing this with audio, correct? Maybe I'll put a link to the video when I post the podcast. You can hear the audio. So Saban apparently is on this yacht. I can't quite make it out to be him, but no one seems to dispute that it is. LSU fans on another yacht. This is like in Miami, I think. LSU fans on another yacht, they start blasting the LSU fight song. When I say blasting it, they are blasting it. I'll put a link to the video so you can hear this for yourself. Sometimes playing video audio on the podcast gets a little tricky. But they are blasting this fight song. Have you ever seen the episode of The Sopranos? It's called Whitecaps, where some of Tony Soprano's cronies take a yacht to the house and they start blasting the Dean Martin music. This, for some reason, that's what this reminds me of. It's kind of an obscure reference. That's what this reminds me of. At one point in time, the figure in the video that it's allegedly supposed to be Saban kind of shrugs about it. I find that to be pretty entertaining. So I'm not an LSU fan, but in this particular case, good for the LSU fans for doing that. And then finally, there's this. So Barstool Sports, you've probably heard of it. Big Cat, the figure associated with Barstool, you may be familiar with him. He also does a podcast. So he's been doing this thing where he's been playing NCAA 14, the old video game, and he was being Texas A&M. He had a coach, kind of a fictitious coach, and a lot of there's a lot of brand activation around this where I guess the season for him playing as Texas Tech ended last night. They went to the Cotton Bowl, so you had the Cotton Bowl tweeting about this, and you had all this kind of stuff. And so then the coach, it's Coach Duggerton, I believe is the guy's name, is the fictitious coach here. So he was now planning on leaving Texas Tech. For those of you who played the NCAA 14, you kind of know what all this is about. And he took the Tennessee job. Now, I'm going to make a very obscure point here for a moment. This is a very obscure point. So this is the official Tennessee Twitter account showing Philip Fulmer basically giving the jersey to Coach Duggs as the new coach of Tennessee here on this. One of the schools that Duggs was apparently also considering choosing in the fictitious world of the NCAA 14 game was Georgia. But I've never been more proud of Georgia, relatively speaking, than I was last night. Because you have all these brands trying to fall all over themselves to be a part of this cool social media moment. But in the Georgia tweet about this, can we show that for the people on here? Georgia, instead of like posting to their like public thing, they only replied to the tweet so it didn't go public to everybody else. Like Georgia's playing along social media-wise, but they're not fully getting involved in this, which I thought was Connor Riley shaking his head no. I feel like that's kind of a nice thing for Georgia to say, listen, we'll play along, we'll have a little bit of fun with you, but we're not going to go that deep into all of this. From that standpoint, I'll give Georgia a look. Like Tennessee's tweeted about this thing like six times already. If you're Jeremy Pruitt, how does that make you feel when the official Tennessee Twitter account is talking incessantly about a fictitious coach? Georgia replied to it with like a little bit of a J.R. Reed wink, but they didn't. It was just a reply. It was not in the public category there. So from that standpoint, I thought that was probably pretty well done by Georgia. We will make that your SEC through. All right. I want to mention this for a moment, and this is not important. I'll be totally candid. But I still think it's sort of interesting. So Athlon Sports has ranked the top 25 SEC coaches of all time. The top five is mostly what you would assume it would be. They still have Bear Bryant over Steve Spurrier, which is probably a little bit of a surprise for me. I'm sorry. They still have Bear Bryant over Nick Saban, which is at this point in time probably a little bit of a surprise. The General Robert Nealon is third. Spurrier is four. Coach Dooley is five. As much as it pains me to say it, I guess that's probably about right on all of that. Johnny Vaught is six. Other Georgia representation, good to see Rick to make the top 10 as the number 10 overall SEC coach in SEC history. Wally Butts also made the list, number 17 overall. But here's where I have a problem. And admittedly, this couldn't matter less, but it's still interesting to me. So at number 25 on this list, you've got Auburn coach Gus Malzahn. Not the 25 best coach in college football now, but the 25th best coach in SEC history. You've got Dan Mullen at 24. You got Tommy Tuberville at 22. Kirby Smart's not on this list. Can you make case that Kirby Smart's already one of the 25 best coaches in SEC history? Because, as we mentioned before, you know, Georgia having won the East 3 years in a row, that's something, right? I mean, that kind of streak, that kind of stretch, that's something. And you can say, well, he's only won one SEC championship, so therefore, that's not enough. But Gus Malzahn's only won one, and Malzahn's had a lot of bad seasons. Dan Mullen hasn't sniffed winning an SEC championship, and he makes the list 24. Tommy Tuberville only won one, right? Yeah, 2004. That's his only one. Pat Dye did win four, I guess. But back then, you could win the SEC by going 8-3. So I sort of feel like if you're going to make a case for you know, best of all time, 25 best of all time, I sort of feel like Kirby Smart might already be there. Ultimately, that's probably not that consequential of a topic one way or another. But, I mean, you are really having to shoehorn Dan Mullen in this conversation. On the basis of what is Mullen one of the 25 best coaches in SEC history? Here's what they cite for him. And this is the thing that comes up for Mullen every single time something like this happens. The fact that he was briefly ranked number one in 2014. He said that they say that the Athlon writer says that's the only time Mississippi State's ever held the number one ranking. He's also had two straight 10-win seasons at Florida. We're not talking about the 25 best coaches currently. We're talking about the 25 best coaches of all time. So if it's up to me, I think Smart probably got snubbed here a little bit. You know, unless he's very fresh into his career. But in terms of already accomplishing an SEC championship, three straight SEC East, 25 best of all time, if the comparison is Gus Malzahn and Dan Mullen, I feel like there's a case to be made for Smart there. All right, so we will get ready to wrap up this way here today. Man, I really feel like we've had a lot of good news recently about football potentially returning. It's not even potential anymore. Football's on its way back. There was some reports out of Columbus that looks like Ohio State's getting ready to be on campus again on June 8th, start that process. Connor said last night on text message or whatever that if Ohio State's coming back June 8th, the SEC is not waiting until June 15th to get back. He is probably right about that. And just you overall just sort of see the mood, the tone kind of changing. Dog Nation Daily being back in studio is kind of a fun example of that there as well. So we're excited about being a part of all of that. Good to have Eddie back on the desk again, too, so everybody can see him. Proud to let you know it's now been 1,299 days since those lousy, stinking Gators have beaten the Georgia Bulldogs. Man, that is good stuff. Thanks for being here on Dog Nation Daily. We'll see you again tomorrow.